Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Life Happens Radio, the weekly radio broadcast that every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. here on WGY brings you information and ideas to help you live your life and plan for your fate, your future, and that of your family. And today's topic, which we will get into in just a moment, is one that is near and dear to many people's hearts, and that is the family home. And this is something in our practice, and our practice is Pierre O'Connor and Strauss. We are attorneys with offices across New York State and Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Florida, and we work with families every day to help them plan the future. And one of the primary assets that comes up in our conversations is the family home. And how do we, as aging seniors, protect it as we age? How do we, as next-gen people, plan for it? And not only the family home, but the second home. Many of our clients have a vacation home on a lake, whether it's Lake George, Saranac Lake, Lake Placid, and or some over in Massachusetts, Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket. How do you plan for that so that when the parents who bought the home and have entertained the family there for many, many years, now we're looking at, like, I have three children, they each have three children, so if it goes to three kids and nine grandkids, how do you manage that? How do you manage that vacation property to keep it in the family? And that's the key to today's show, keeping the home and the vacation home in the family. Before we get to that, I just want to take a moment and introduce my co-host for today, and that is my partner, Peter Strauss. Peter, although he was in Albany yesterday, is joining us today from Manhattan. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Lou. Good morning, everyone.
And I want to talk a little bit about our firm, because yesterday, the reason Peter was here in Albany is that we had our annual firm summer outing, and we had it at my home, and the staff and attorneys that were there are the ones that serve our clients. And I just want our listeners to know what a phenomenal group of people we have assembled at Pierre O'Connor and Strauss. And Peter, as we were sitting having lunch yesterday, you commented, this is just a remarkable group. And I think that people don't get to see behind the curtain sometimes, but the clients that work with us deal with our associate attorneys, our paralegals, our legal assistants, our marketing department. And we've really been able to put together, I think, a tremendous group here.
That's absolutely true, Lou. You delivered a wonderful afternoon for all of us to enjoy our company, get to know each other, play some silly games, of course, and a wonderful dinner. And it was worth coming up to be together and have the New York team meet some of the upstate team that they have not met in person, sometimes by Zoom, but mostly by phone. And they are not only talented and intelligent, but extremely caring. And it was quite remarkable to feel the warmth and dedication to the goals of our practice, both in New York City and the metropolitan area and the Albany metropolitan area. And before we get into the topics, I just have to suggest everybody look at the census reports. The elderly population is still, and we're an elder law firm, among other things. The elderly population is still a fastest growth segment in the population. We're now 331 million Americans. And New York City metropolitan, or actually New York City itself, the five boroughs, is 44% of the state's population. Mm-hmm. And it's growing. Surprisingly, people thought the New York population was sinking, but that is not true. And New York State maybe was fortunate that we've only lost one congressional seat, and that's in large part, it was only one because of the growth in the metropolitan areas, which is a nationwide trend. And just to demonstrate how the aging population is growing, there's something called the Villages in Florida, which was 80,000 people in the last census. It's a city unto itself. It's now 130,000 people. The Villages is the fastest growing city in America.
And that's over 65 population. 65. And actually, our partner Aaron Connor's parents live in the Villages. And it's a pretty dynamic place. So your point, Peter, is well taken. And on that topic and on that note, I have to wish my aunt a happy birthday today. And this is my Aunt Nettie. And Aunt Nettie today turns 99. So in Italian, we say cent'anni, which means may you live to be 100 years. And that's only a one more year gig for Aunt Nettie. So I don't know what we're going to say after she turns 100, and we hope she does. But happy birthday, Aunt Nettie. Today is her 99th birthday, and the family's going to gather tomorrow with her to try to celebrate. And she's doing extremely well at age 99, Peter. And
well, there are many. You know, I celebrated with my wife her cousin's 104th birthday last Sunday. We went out to dinner. She walks slowly and has vision problems and hearing, but she asked me if I could get her a talking book about 13th century Chinese art, because that was one subject she hasn't mastered yet. So there's hope for all of us.
There certainly is, and we are so grateful to have those people in our lives, because they just have such wonderful memories and an ability to make sense out of what is in many people's eyes a very chaotic world. But when you've lived through the Depression, you've lived through World War II, all of the other things that have happened over the last century, you bring a different perspective. And it kind of is a calming influence for me, anyway, to know that those people survived all of those things and are still aging very, very well and still able to enjoy things like 13th century Chinese art. That's amazing.
Right. Well, let's tell folks how we can help them.
And so today we're going to talk about the home. And my parents have a familiar story. Their parents, my grandparents, were all immigrants, one set from Italy, one set from Poland. They all came over in the late 1890s, and they settled first in New York City, having come through Ellis Island, and then moved to upstate New York. And my parents met and lived in Hudson, New York. And the year that I was born, and I will give that out, 1958, they were living in a building in Hudson in a flat and decided to build a house. So in 1958, my parents built the home that I grew up in, literally the year I was born. And that home was in our family for many, many years. My parents lived there. They raised my sister and myself there. We had other people, my grandparents, my mother's parents came and lived with us in that homestead. My mother's sister, so my Aunt Stella came and lived with us in that homestead. And my father looked at me after I graduated from law school and he said, son, now we've built this house, we've paid off the mortgage. And back then, Peter, they had a mortgage burning party. They would literally burn the mortgage and have a celebration when they were debt free. And he came to me and said, how do I protect this house? And I was right out of law school, and I was doing litigation at the time, so I didn't really know much about elder law. And that was just 1985 or so. And I started to look at ways to protect the home. And as time went on, I started to attend some seminars. And the Trust and Estates section of the New York State Bar had a committee on seniors at the time. There was no elder law section. There was no real elder law practice. So I went to one of these seminars. I think it was down in Tarrytown, New York. And Vincent Russo, Bob Abrams, Bob Friedman, all of the people who were practicing elder law kind of way ahead of the curve were speaking at that, and they gave the ideas on how that family home could be protected. So I brought that back to my dad, and we set up a trust and put the house into a trust, and it stayed in that trust. Both my parents lived there all the way through till their deaths. And when my parents were gone, my sister and I sold the home from the trust, and she and I were able to do that very quickly because there was no probate, no need for court. We then divided the proceeds, and, you know, it was sad that we had to sell the family home, but it has a happy ending because just this year, just a couple of months ago, my sister bought back the family homestead. That's how emotional the family home is. So she now lives back where my parents built the home. And she is living there and hopefully will stay there for the foreseeable future. The home is an emotional asset, Peter, and it's something that ties families together. You celebrate your holidays there, your most special moments there. You suffer together in that home when you have tragedies in life, but it is something that binds people together. And it's not only an emotional asset, but it is for many of our clients the most important financial asset as well. And property values during COVID in our area have just spiked. We're now seeing homes that just a year ago were up 30, 40, 50% in value for many homes in upstate New York. And so that homestead is now an asset that needs to be managed properly and taken care of as part of a sound estate plan. And Peter, your history in elder law, for those of our listeners that don't know Peter Strauss, he is one of the founders of elder law, goes back beyond mine into the 1970s. So give us your take on this and how you have seen the home and how the home is dealt with in your practice.
Well, you're absolutely right. It is more than just an asset which is held for investment. It is people's lives. I grew up in northern New Jersey before I went to law school in New York and stayed in the city and still live here. So it is emotional. It is history of family, but it is also the financial asset. So when we talk about protecting the home, we're talking not only about protecting those memories and that family history, and in many cases trying to keep it in the family, although that doesn't often happen. But there are also creditor issues, protecting the home from creditors. There are real estate tax exemptions that people need to protect, and if you make certain kinds of changes in the home, you might lose those homestead or veterans benefit exemptions. There is the need to protect the home if you become ill in later life and may need Medicaid to help you pay for either your home care benefits or your nursing home care. And we need to protect the home from claims of the county or the state to recoup the advances that they have made to the Medicaid program. And then we have tax questions. And some of these problems are different for second homes than they are for your primary residence. But one thing, as we talk today, that people should keep in mind, many people, I'm sure this is happening upstate, but it's certainly happening with New Yorkers who have second homes either in Western Connecticut or Massachusetts or in Long Island in the Hamptons or on the North Fork. Their second homes are becoming their primary residences. Yeah. So we have to keep in mind now, as looking forward, because of the pandemic and because of some people's fear of being in the larger metropolitan areas, they're moving to their second residences. So either we need to perhaps review the strategies we've worked on and produced in the past, but certainly in the future, because only one home can be exempt for Medicaid or for real estate tax purposes.
And we're gonna unravel this. And we're going to talk about the primary residence and how you can set that up so that you're fully protected. You can live in your home for the rest of your life. It will go on to the children. It will be protected for Medicaid purposes. The tax laws will be enforced in your favor. And we usually use a trust to accomplish all of that. So we'll be talking about that property. And also, as you mentioned, that second home, whether it be on Lake George or in the Hamptons or on Cape Cod, that is, in many cases, the family gathering place where people, children, as they grow, they come back to that home, not necessarily the primary residence. And we want to protect that going forward as well. But first, we have to take a short break. So we're going to come back after the break and talk about your home, your second home, how you can protect it, the steps you can take today to make sure that your family's future is secure. You're listening to Life Happens Radio. I'm Lou Piro, on with Peter Strauss. We're going to come right back after this short break. Welcome back. You're listening to Life Happens. WGY, I'm Lou Piro, your host for this morning, on with my partner down in Manhattan, Peter Strauss. And we're talking about something near and dear to many people's hearts, and that is their home. They do say, Peter, home is where the heart is. And so how do we protect that home? And one of the things that we have to protect it from that you mentioned, Peter, is long-term care. And the cost of long-term care, the New York Times has been writing a series of articles on care and how it just bankrupts people. And the home is an asset that, if you do need long-term care, can be subject to collection and sale and use for the cost of that care where Medicaid may otherwise provide that cost. So we look at protecting the home and setting it up in such a way. So if you do want to bring care into the home, and Medicaid in New York State is very generous at providing care in the home, or if you need to go to a nursing home, you want to make sure that that home is protected. And Medicaid, Peter, is in New York a generous program, but the financial rules are difficult and they are changing very, very soon. So it's important for our clients to get out in front of this.
Correct. And the issue with the protection of the value of a home with Medicaid, so we'll stay with that for a moment, is that while the home, if it's your primary residence and it has an equity value, if you're not married, if it has an equity value of less than, what's the number this year, Lou, $887,000 equity,
yes. Mm-hmm.
That means the value less the mortgage. If you're a single person and it's greater than that, it's not exempt. But for most people, particularly upstate, the home will be exempt even if you're getting Medicaid. And everybody says, okay, I don't have to worry about it. The house is protected. Not true, because at the time of your death, Medicaid has a right to recover its expenditures during your lifetime from the value of your probate assets. And if the house is in your individual name, it passes under your will. That makes it a probate asset, and the state can recoup its expenditures. And Lou said the magic words twice already today. The solution here is a trust. If you transfer the title to a trust, which is irrevocable, meaning you can't take it back, otherwise you haven't accomplished anything, this is within the Medicaid context. The trust is an irrevocable trust. We call it a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. Then there is no right of recovery if you have a valid irrevocable trust because it is not part of your probate estate. So the biggest key to protecting the home for the benefit of whichever of your children wants to live there and buy it from the estate or take it as part of his or her share of the estate, it is protected if it is that kind of a trust.
And you must do this early. I
want to
jump in there, Peter, because when you say irrevocable trust, a lot of people get very scared. And that word, irrevocable, seems like it's now in concrete and I lose control and I lose access. But let's break it down as to how the trust works with regard to a home. One of the provisions in that trust says that the grantor, the person who owns the home and puts it into the trust, has the absolute right to live in that home for the remainder of their lifetime, which no one can encumber. Nobody can tinker with your right to live in your home if it's in a properly crafted trust. You're going to continue to pay taxes and expenses and upkeep and maintenance just as you do now. You're going to keep your tax benefits. And Peter, you mentioned the tax benefits. Let's kind of get into that quickly. You want to keep a real property tax exemption. If you have a STAR exemption in New York State, you want to make sure you keep that. If you have a veterans exemption, you want to make sure you keep that. And even though this trust is irrevocable, you're able to keep all of your tax exemptions on your property, which for many people makes it possible for them to live there.
Correct. And the other big benefit, of course, is that if you, and because you have the right to live there, and we're not going to get into the details of the language, but because you have a right to live there, it is theoretically part of what we call your taxable estate for estate tax purposes. And then the persons who inherit from the trust get a new cost basis for capital gains income tax purposes equal to the value on the date of death, not the $30,000 that you paid for the home, but the $300,000 or $700,000 that it's worth today.
Yeah.
So you eliminate that capital gain tax for federal and New York purposes by having it in the trust where you keep enough rights to get the benefit of that so-called step-up and cost basis rules.
And that is now, so important.
Yes, there is some talk that in the Biden plans that step-up rule may be eliminated. We don't think that particular rule is going to be changed. But the capital gain rates are going up.
If you're earning over a million, that's only for people earning more than $1 million. So for most people, they're not going to face that 39.6% capital gains rate. The top rate today is 20%. federal, but there's also a New York State tax on top of that of about 9%. And so that step up in basis eliminates worrying about that capital gains tax. And I agree with you. They have tried to repeal the carryover or the step up in basis rules a couple times before, and it hasn't gone well. So that's a tough one. I don't think they're going to be able to do that, but we keep a very close eye on it, and we keep education as part of our practice in the forefront. And you can always go to our website and get the latest on the tax law changes at purolaw.com. But irrevocable, you keep the right to live in the house. A lot of people used to use something called a life estate, which is just a one sentence in a deed that says, I give it to my kids, but I keep the right to live there. And that does work, but it has limitations. If you ever want to mortgage the house or you want to sell the house during your lifetime, let's say you want to go to a nice independent living community or you want to move down to Florida and you want to sell the house, if you've put the deed in your children's name and you retain the life estate, then there is a key element, that exclusion from capital gain on sale of a primary residence, which every individual has up to $250,000 of capital gain, can be excluded when you sell your home, your primary home. That goes away if you put the home in the children's name and reserve a life estate, in addition to which, when you sell the house, the money goes to the kids. But a trust solves those problems, Peter, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The trust is a much more flexible and important and usable technique to transfer ownership. But at some point, and maybe we should start looking at the issue now, a lot of parents feel that they'd just like to give the ownership of their home to their children. And this is particularly true with the vacation home. That is not a good idea for several reasons.
Yeah, First of all, before you unpack that, let's use that as our teaser because we have to break for the news.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right. When people do things they think are simple and they have a shortcut, the long-term consequences very often come back to bite you. So how do you do it properly? How do you maintain your home? That's vacation property, the lake house. We're going to come back after the news and tell you exactly how to do it. You're listening to Life Happens on Talk Radio WGY. We will be right back. Welcome back to Life Happens Radio. I am Lou Piro, your host for this morning, along with my co-host, Peter Strauss. We are partners at Piro, Connor & Strauss, a law firm in New York State that does estate planning, elder law, business succession planning, tax. We do litigation. Our partner, Aaron Connor, is very deep into estate and trust and guardianship litigation. And that's our law firm. You can reach us at 866-951-7526 if you're calling outside the 518, but if you're in the 518, it's 518-459-2100. And I would encourage you, if you have questions or you want to learn more about any of those topics, estate planning, elder law, business planning, go to our website, purolaw.com. We've done a lot of work, and Peter, part of our resource team is Beth Wortman and Tim Flynn, our marketing department. They've done a wonderful job putting content on our website that helps our clients to get up to speed. And it's not just blogs. It's not just guides. We do have a 2021 estate planning guide that goes through all of the issues that we're talking about today. And we have a long-term care planning guide specifically for asset protection, Medicaid planning. But we also have videos. And the pandemic took us out of the hotel room where we did seminars and other locations. And we did a lot of webinars. So those are all available for you on the video section of the website. We have blogs, we have events. And I want to tell you about two events that are coming up that I'll be working on. One is this Tuesday, so it's only a few days away. Tuesday, August 17th, from noon to 1 p.m. It's called Have Your Cake and Eat It Too. A lot of what we're talking about today with regard to the home and keeping the home, but giving it away and protecting it long-term, the secrets to successful estate planning, I'll be giving that talk at 12 o'clock. We'll be serving some refreshments. So noon to 1 p.m., it's right at our office at 43 British American Boulevard. And you can register in any one of three ways. You can send us an email, info at PiroLaw.com and register yourself. You can go to the website, and that's how I would prefer you do it. Just go to PiroLaw, PIERROLAW.com, and you can get the registration, all the information on the program from 12 to 1 this Tuesday, or you can always call us at 518-459-2100 and register. This Tuesday, noon to 1, have your cake and eat it too, the secrets to successful estate planning. And we have another program that I'm going to be doing on August 26th, the following Thursday. So August 26th, again, noon to 1 at our office, Savvy Social Security and Long-Term Care Planning. Don't miss them. Join us. And we love having our listeners come to the seminars, and now we can do some things live, at least for now. Tuesday, August 17th, Thursday, August 26th, go to PiroLaw.com events, and you can sign up right there or call us at 518-459-2100. Thus endeth the commercial. So, Peter, talking about the home, talking about trusts, and talking about Medicaid and taxes. And Medicaid and taxes, I always say to clients, it's like oil and water. They just don't mix. But in this case, we're able to blend this trust, the irrevocable trust that you were talking about, and make it work for both purposes, to preserve real property tax exemptions, veterans exemptions, the capital gains exclusion of $250,000 when you sell the home, the step up in basis when the children inherit the home so they don't have to pay capital gains taxes. But for Medicaid purposes, this trust has to be done in advance. And let's, if you would, tell our listeners a little bit about the rules if you go to a nursing home, and then the rules as they're going to be configured for home care on January 1st.
So with respect to Medicaid, if you are going to need nursing home care as opposed to long-term community chronic care, which is the home care benefit, there has always been, under federal law, which must be followed by the states, what's called a look-back period, a period of years when, if you've made the transfer of any asset, the home or securities or cash, to other than your spouse where there is an exemption, there will be a period of ineligibility if the transfer falls within that so-called look-back period. And now it's 5 years. When I first started doing elder law, it was 18 months, maybe even 1 year. I've forgotten already.
Yeah. That was a while
ago. But now it's 5 years. And so you have a waiting period before you're eligible for Medicaid. And that waiting period doesn't start when you transfer the home to your children or into some kind of a trust. It starts when you go to the nursing home and would otherwise be eligible for Medicaid because you had no other assets except for the fact that you made this transfer. So it's a very harsh rule, and it needs to be carefully considered. And there are different strategies, and we're not going to have the time today just to let you know we can do this, whether you're going to be needing nursing home care very quickly or whether there is some time. And we have some successful strategies to work around that waiting period rule. For home care benefits in New York, which are unlike any other states, we have even though there are some cutbacks and more difficulties in getting eligibility, there is still a very generous home care program here in New York. You know, I like to tell clients that sometimes the best advice I ever give to people who lived in northern New Jersey was move your apartment to Staten Island and you get all these benefits that New Jersey doesn't offer. I call that legal advice, but it's really practical advice.
Sure.
So for home care benefits, we never did have this look-back period. There was no waiting period in New York State for community Medicaid, but because of New York State's high cost of Medicaid as part of its budget and because of the pandemic, the governor, soon to be an ex-governor, basically got the legislature to impose a two-and-a-half-year waiting period, a two-and-a-half-year look-back period for the Medicaid home care benefits. And that new law, having been postponed for a few months on several occasions, will now become effective January 1st, 2022. So, as an aside, if anybody thinks that they have a parent or a spouse who needs Medicaid home care benefits, the time to act is now so that this can all be accomplished under the old rules rather than the new law. So that is a serious problem. There are some issues regarding transfers for New York, which does not have a gift tax, but the transfers within 3 years might come back in terms of calculating your estate tax. But that's a conversation for another show.
And that's most people aren't in both ballparks. You know, when we do estate tax planning, it's for clients who have more than $5,930,000. And for clients that have more than $5,930,000, most of them aren't doing Medicaid planning because they have cash flow. They have enough money. And just to let you know what the cost of care is, upstate, we're running at around $160,000 per year, and downstate around $200,000 per year for nursing home care, someplace that most people think they would never be. But nursing homes are full, and somebody's there. So it happens, and it happens for a variety of reasons. And if you go to a nursing home, you're going to be paying right in the Capital District $160,000 per year. It's about $15,000 per month. And that money goes very, very quickly. And if you're in a nursing home, that's going to include the value of your home and your vacation home. So when we talk about setting things up in advance, for nursing home care, it's 5 years. For home health care, come January 1, it's going to be 2.5 years. And so you want to get this planning done in advance. And the hurdle that a lot of people have to get over, Peter, is that I'm giving away my home. But you're not. You're putting it in
a
trust.
No, you're not. That's right. Because as you said earlier, Lou, the trust is constructed so that you have the right to remain there. And the value of your right to live in your own home for Medicaid purpose doesn't have any dollar equivalent. It might for other for some tax for planning, but not for Medicaid. So this is an absolutely critical strategy and needs to be done before the end of the year.
Well, and even if you're doing it now, it's still after January 1 going to have a 2.5 year look back. So the sooner the better to get the clock ticking. And your life, when you put the deed to your home in this trust, your life doesn't change one iota. You're still paying the bills, taxes. You still have the absolute right to live there. You keep all your property exemptions. And the trust owns the house. If you want to sell the house in the future, and I mentioned earlier, when you do a simple deed to the kids or you reserve a life estate in a deed, that has negative, terribly negative consequences when you go to sell the home. But the trust can sell the home. And the proceeds from the sale go into the trust and are all still fully protected for you. So it gives you the flexibility and the option to sell the home and to then use the proceeds, could buy you a second home, another home. You could buy a home in Florida. You could buy into the Beverwick or the Avila, which have buy-ins and they're wonderful independent living communities. You still have all of that freedom and flexibility because the money is still there to be used for your residential purposes.
So, and is still protected.
And still protected. So the trusts today, and I say this to all of the clients that do trusts, we have the opportunity to do this trust today, but no one knows next year what the legislature is going to do, what the new governor is going to do, and how they're going to approach planning on this basis, because we can do a very good job right now of protecting your home yet keeping the full rights that you have currently to live there and all of the same tax benefits. Whether that's going to be available in the future, we just can't say for certain. But Peter, you and I together, and I've counted this up, we're pretty close between the two of us to a 100 years of legal experience. And that's a frightening number, two attorneys. I won't say who's got more, but we're about 100 years of legal experience. And all of my experience, and you can comment on yours, anytime the government has changed a law, they've grandfathered in any planning that's already done. And I think we can expect at least that to protect the trusts that are done today. Do you agree?
Absolutely, and that's more than just being good people and part of the legislatures. There are constitutional reasons why they often cannot make these changes retroactive. But the trust also solves, I think, another critical problem that we really do want to talk to today, which is particularly with vacation homes. The issue of management and use of the property when the parents have died. And by giving outright a vacation home to children, one, you lose the tax benefits of the cost, the capital gain step up, but also you often fail to think about the consequences. You have three children, they get along, they love each other, you're all close, but suddenly they now own this property and it's May and they're going to decide who's going to use the house at the Cape or on Lake George for July 4th weekend or Labor Day weekend or the first 2 weeks in August. And suddenly loving siblings are at war with each other. And the failure was that the planning about that concern should be done as you're creating the trust, or even if you, for some reason, you do a different kind of transfer to the children, don't give it to them until there has been family discussion about these issues and create a way to manage those decisions. I just recently did some planning for a client of many years. He's got three daughters, has a house at West Hampton Beach. He told me one day he's going to transfer it to them outright. Well, one, he was ignoring the tax questions, but even perhaps more importantly, because sometimes the tax tail shouldn't wag the dog, it was how have they thought out who's going to use it if, as, and when they want to go? They all want to go the same 2 weeks in July. So we worked out a management agreement with a decision-making process, and it includes things like suppose one of the children wants to sell the property because they never go there, or they need the money for financial reasons. How are those issues going to be handled? So we can do a management agreement. We can incorporate the terms into the trust, and that might require for those decisions an independent trustee, not one or all of the children, because then you have the same problem. Sometimes we can use a limited liability company and have daddy can be the managing agent, even though he's given it away.
That is my preferred method. And we've used LLCs, limited liability companies, and most people think, well, this isn't a business, but it gives you the opportunity to run that vacation property like a business. And questions come up. If you have three kids that own this limited liability company and two can pay their share of the taxes and upkeep, but one can't, how do you adjust the economic interests long-term in that kind of a situation? And a limited liability company gives you the opportunity to write all the things you just mentioned into an operating agreement, which can adjust capital accounts and take care of not just the scheduling, not just the maintenance, not just the who's in charge, because in an LLC you have a managing member who can be put in charge, and you can rotate that. One child can have the responsibility each year, and you can rotate managers so they have authority to do things. And many times those properties are rented for a portion of the year, and you have rental income. The LLC gives you an excellent way to manage the rental income, provide the maintenance and upkeep on the property, and then have the ability for the family to use it in a well-reasoned, well-thought-out way. And you still get, if it's in the trust, we do this right inside of the trust, and then when the children inherit that vacation property, it's already been managed by the LLC while the parents are owning it in their trust, and then it just flips over to the kids, and you've got a full structure there so that it can be harmoniously kept within the family. So we're going to take our last break and then come back and talk about how this irrevocable trust becomes not so irrevocable and why it is not such a bad deal to do it early, get it in place, have it protecting the assets and having the clock running, and still have the flexibility to change course if the necessity arises. We'll be back with that after a short break. I'm Lou Piro, on with Peter Strauss. You're listening to Life Happens Radio every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on Talk Radio WGY, 810 a.m. and 103.1 FM. We will be right back. Back. You're listening to Life Happens on Talk Radio WGY. I am Lou Piro, your host for this morning, with my co-host Peter Strauss, and we're talking about the home. How do families protect the homestead, get the care that people need in the home, and protect it long term? And Peter, this trust also avoids probate, an ancillary benefit that we didn't really focus on. we do on other shows, but keeping yourself out of court is always preferred. And this does it for your home. It does it for your vacation home. And we're not talking about the other assets today, like your stocks and bonds and brokerage accounts and IRAs, but all of those things get worked into the plan too. IRAs do not go into the trust, but any other type of asset can. And so you can protect your liquid assets, your brokerage account, your investments in this same trust, along with your home, along with your vacation property. It can all be done. Get it done early enough and get it done in advance. And that irrevocable word, Peter, that spooks a lot of people, we have workarounds for that. And in New York, we have a law, as they do in some other states, that allows us to actually break an irrevocable trust. And that's EPTL. I love to use this section. EPTL 7-1.9. And that gives our clients a little bit of safeguard if they ever want to just break the trust and get the assets back.
That is correct. And that section of the statute is frequently used to terminate a trust that can't be terminated. It does require the consent of all of the beneficiaries. So it won't work in certain circumstances, such as when there are minor beneficiaries. And we're not talking about the beneficiaries who are living there or receiving current benefits, but the what are called the remainder persons, the persons who take the ownership of the assets of the trust when the trust ends. So if you have minors, you really probably can't use 7-1.9.
However,
there are other rules. I'm sorry, you want to comment on?
Oh, yeah, because this goes into the trust design. And again, we've been working on this trust, same basic format with modifications and tweaks as we learn over time. And our firm has been in existence for, in its current format, 22 years. So we've used this document and we do it with other colleagues in the Bar Association. We teach it, we compare notes, and you can retain two powers over the trust that give our clients great comfort when they create a quote unquote irrevocable trust. One is you're going to name someone as the trustee, but you always have the power to change. So if you name a trustee and the trustee is not performing as you want them to, you can remove the trustee, fire them. And I tell the parents, and a lot of times the kids are sitting there, you can look at your children and say, hey, you're fired. And they're off the trust as trustee. But the more potent tool that you have in the toolbox is you can change beneficiaries at any time. So think about that. You have a law in New York that says you can change your trust or revoke your trust with the consent of the beneficiaries. And within that same trust, you have retained the right to change beneficiaries, to name people who will be cooperative, and to remove minor children if you've structured it so that grandchildren who are minors are beneficiaries. You can remove them, Peter, and still have the ability to revoke that irrevocable trust.
Correct, because you remove the impediment to using that section of the statute.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But there are also other, you know, things that you can do. You can make, perhaps the trustee can make distributions that may or may not be wise. Perhaps we can do what's called decanting, move the assets of the trust into a new trust. And again, each one of these has highly complicated and technical requirements in order to go down those paths, since we certainly don't have the time today. But I think the point of this discussion is that the plan is broader than just the Medicaid application. You've got to do all these follow-up issues, and elder law is more than just Medicaid planning, as I think this discussion will demonstrate to those of you who are listening today. Elder law takes into account a broad range of subjects, and we at the firm believe that we have the experience and skills to analyze your issues and point out things that you may never have thought about, such as some of the issues we talked about today.
Yeah, a lot of people ask the question, what's the difference between estate planning and elder law? And the only difference is age. Because if we're doing this planning for people who are in their 30s, who have a young family, and we're looking at wills and trusts and other powers of attorney and healthcare proxies, well, clearly that's estate planning. But when you get to retirement planning and that could be in your 50s, that could be in your 60s, 70s. Then you start to look at the issues of long-term care, and that's when estate planning and elder law really dovetail into one topic. So when we're doing estate planning, we are incorporating the thoughts and ideas of elder law into that planning when we're looking at long-term care, Medicare, Medicaid, the housing issue, where do you want to live, the health care issues, all of those incorporate into the estate plan and really become the body of elder law.
Absolutely true. And I would suggest that those of you who work with financial planners look at the programs and the projections that they prepared for you and note that in most cases they won't be including another schedule that analyzes your ability to pay for long-term care if that should become a need. And ask yourself, why isn't that the case? Because some financial planners and some elder law attorneys or even, you know, trust and estates attorneys don't plug that into the planning, and we do. And that's where elder law and estate planning really merge. You must consider this, even if you're confident that you're never going to have a need for long-term care. As Lou created this show, calls it Life Happens, sometimes the happenings are not so great. And that's what we do in our practice and feel strongly that every client has to focus on those solutions.
So we're talking today primarily about the home and the vacation home and how to protect and preserve those. If you don't need Medicaid and you have long-term care insurance, that's a very comprehensive plan, or you have sufficient cash flow to pay that $200,000 a year of long-term care costs, you still want to do a trust for the home, and that would be a revocable trust, which is much simpler, and you can be your own trustee there. And you're still going to talk about the limited liability company for the vacation property or a side agreement or a trust agreement that's going to map out how that property is going to be utilized, how it's going to be paid for, financed. All of that should be pre-planned. And that's whether you're doing a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust for Medicaid planning, long-term care purposes. The same thought process, Peter, goes into protecting the home, keeping it out of court, keeping it out of probate, and planning for that next generation. And that has become such an important part of our practice, is looking at the kids, looking at the grandkids, and securing those assets onto next generations.
And where it's true. And the only other issue I guess we won't have time to discuss today is the question of often asked by our clients is, I have a child with disabilities. Do I leave equal shares to all of my three children? Do I provide more for the child with disabilities, or maybe it was on Medicaid, maybe less? That's part of this discussion
and
with your
people
children.
People can find that on our website, specialneedsplanning@pirolaw.com. It will be the subject of future shows. Peter Strauss, thank you for joining us this morning. Thank you all for listening. Every Saturday morning, tell your friends we're here on Talk Radio WGY. Thanks for listening to Life Happens.